It's time for the Douglas Coleman Show. Mr. Smooth and Savvy is joined by guests from all walks of life. From the entertainment industry, to authors, to political and social commentators. The famous and not so famous. The controversial and the light and fluffy. We have it all. Now, here's Douglas Coleman.
Well, hello there. Heidi, heidi ho there. Welcome to the Douglas Coleman Show. It's me, Douglas Coleman, of course. How are ya? Nice to have you with us. Mr. John Biner is here today. Mr. Biner has had an extraordinary career in show business that has spanned over six decades. Notably, he was on The Tonight Show, The Ed Sullivan Show, The Carol Burnett Show, as well as several of his own shows which he hosted. One called Something Else, a syndicated half-hour musical variety show. And then he hosted the John Biner Comedy Hour, as well as several other shows during the 1980s. He's worked with just about everybody who's anybody in this business for the past 60 years. He's got some great stories, very funny stories. His new book, 5 Minutes, Mr. Biner, A Lifetime of Laughter, is available now. Please get your copy. And as he says in the interview, it's available on audiobook as well, for those of you that don't like to read. So it was a full show interview, so we got to get right to it. We will be right back with John Biner.
You're listening to Mr. Smooth and Savvy right here on the Douglas Coleman Show. We'll be right back after these commercial messages.
Hi there, this is Stuart Epps, record producer. This is my story about Elton John, working with him in those early years, going back to 1967 at Dick James, all the amazing tours, those first recordings. Going through to Rocket Records, and it's an amazing story about his incredible rise to stardom and my part in that. So look forward to taking you on that journey. So here we go.
Yeah, and to order this great audio CD, please just email me at stuartepps@talk21.com. That's Stuart, S-T-U-A-R-T, Epps, E-P-P-S, at talk, T-A-L-K, 21 in figures, .com. Stuart Epps at talk21.com. Email me and I'll give you all the details for buying this brilliant audio disc. Thank you. Bye.
DJC Music and DJC Productions are pleased to announce a brand new website. We have started a listing website for radio show hosts as well as potential show guests. This is a meeting site where hosts and guests can come together. Show hosts can list their show and types of guests they're interested in booking. Potential guests can list their talents, bio, accomplishments, or anything they feel makes them an interesting radio show guest. There are no recurrent payments, only a one-time $5 listing fee. Your listing will stay up until you decide to cancel. Previous guests of the Douglas Coleman Show are welcome to submit their guest listing free of charge. Go to radiohostsandguests.com. That's radiohostsandguests.com.
Are you an independent musician? How would you like to have your songs played on hundreds of radio stations just like the one you're listening to right now? Join MusicSubmit.com and we'll promote your music to radio stations and blogs in your genre. It's free to set up your account, and we guarantee your music will be considered for airplay by radio stations worldwide. Why not sign up today? It's free. MusicSubmit.com, radio promotion for indie musicians.
Hurry, Bullwinkle! The show's about to start!
I'm coming as fast as I can!
And now...
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Again?
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto! Ooh, don't know my own strength.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Okay, please welcome to the Douglas Coleman Show, John Biner. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine, Douglas, and yourself?
Doing very well, thank you. I got to tell
you,
it's a real treat to have you on the show because I grew up watching you. And when
okay.
when Charlie Barrett sent me the email and said, "Would you like to have John Byner on your show?" Yes, yes, yes. The funniest thing is that I remember all your impressions, and I didn't really remember what your real voice sounded like. So I'm kind of glad that I get a chance to speak to you in your normal voice.
Well, how do you know this is my normal voice?
I'm going to make a guess.
Okay. You're right. It is. It is.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like Donald Duck or John Wayne. So
no.
I think
or Cagney.
Okay. Or Cagney. Yeah, exactly. So, wow. I don't even know where to start. You got a book out. I guess we could start there.
Yes. Okay. 5 minutes, Mr. Byner, it's called, which is what people would do before I'd go on. 5 minutes, Mr. Byner. So I decided I'd make that the title. And it's all about my life and starting out and getting into the business somehow and the people I've met along the way and the fun I've had and the not fun sometimes and the like, about my family, you know, all about that stuff.
I'm looking at your Wikipedia bio, which is a pretty long bio. So if you don't mind, you want to cover just chronologically a couple of the points on here? Would that be all right?
Well, I just wanted one thing.
Yeah.
I heard about Wikipedia, so I figured, hey, I'll look at that, see what it looks like. The first thing I saw was they had my birthday wrong.
Oh.
So I figured, hey, this is a hell of a start.
Well, let's see.
Okay, so go on.
Okay,
go
Wikipedia. They've got June 28, 1937. Is that correct or is that wrong?
Okay, that's right. Now, yeah, it was that's 38 right. for a while.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'll just go over this real quick. It's at 17, you joined the Navy, and then at 21, you got out of the Navy. You started working at a swimming pool company in Long Island.
Yeah.
And then at that time, you started working nights. I assume you were doing your stand-up and your impressions, right?
Yeah, yeah. I always had, you know, they didn't have comedy clubs in those days. Can't believe it, but they never did. And I always worked with a trio where somebody else was on the show, and then the comedian and this, that, and the other thing. And I was working in the pool company, and I was driving by a sign in Syosset, Long Island, that said entertainment every Saturday night. So when I needed some extra money, I had kids at the time. I was married, and so I remembered that sign, and it was a Saturday, and I was really getting the, you got to do some things. And so I got my suit on, went over, and asked the guy. It was like unbelievable. I walked in to hear this one guy clapping. This comic was getting off the stage. Just one person was clapping. And I thought, this is a sign. Either a good one or a bad one, but it's a sign. So I found the owner of the place and asked him if he wouldn't mind if I'd get up. He said, well, it couldn't hurt. And I got up, and he hired me to be there every Saturday, and it went on for about 3 months, and it was very nice. And from there, I was doing a JFK impersonation as a football coach, and thinking he could use JFK's voice to get the guys to pay attention to him, and that was going over very well. And one of the guys in the trio told me, he was going through the paper between shows and newspaper, and he said, hey, there's a JFK contest in Manhattan, and that's all I needed to hear. So I went in and I paid my dues at the door. A guy loved comedy, had this thing going, and it was filled with agents and managers and all these people who were interested in show business and some of the comics. And I got up and did my thing, and I won the big prize, which was $10.
Wow!
paid for gasoline back to my house. And but anyway, I met the man who became my manager, my personal manager. He managed Thelonious Monk and Mose Allison just as a kind of a hobby, because he was an English teacher in Plainview, Long Island. And anyway, he got hold of me after this thing. And he said, boy, you know, I'd sure like to talk to you. And he needed it. And he used his influence in those jazz clubs to get me some jobs in town, mostly, you know, just for car fare and stuff. There was no big money going on there in the beginning. And then I got into the Greenwich Village clubs and did half a dozen of those throughout my visits to the village. And And I got down into the Vanguard, which was very nice, jazz room, if you're familiar. You in New York now?
No, I'm in Las Vegas, actually.
Oh, I see. Well, then it was a big jazz thing. It probably still is. And and a fellow came in from the Sullivan Show. I did Sullivan in the act, and the rest is what happened.
I think it's interesting that jazz clubs in those days, they would have comedians as openers for the jazz music, yeah?
Well, yeah, well, in between the sets, and that's, you know, down in the Vanguard, say, Roland Kirk worked, I worked with him and many other jazz musicians down there. And down in the basement, basically, you can hear the rumble of the subway as you're going through your act.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, basically, the jazz clubs did have people who leaned toward making jazz fans. You know, I did Sinatra and Johnny Mathis and Tony Bennett and things like that that, you know, they got a kick out of. And in between kicks, I was doing my other bits.
What year were you on The Sullivan Show?
I think it was 64, 1964. I was about... you know, I wasn't into the business, no, the real card-carrying business, and that was my first real good show.
Was it before or after the Beatles were on there?
Well, as a matter of fact, it was around the same time.
Did you run into them?
No, but John Carsey, who was the writer on the show, the Johnny Carson show, invited me to come and actually see them walk by.
Oh.
I mean, they were so popular, it was amazing. It was amazing when they hit this country.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how old you are, but it was, like, unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
I was just a little kid, but I'm definitely a Beatles fan and have watched all the films on YouTube. And
great music. It's so different levels and different styles they had over the years. They were together, and it's amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The other one I wanted to ask you if you ran into in your travels at that time was Lenny Bruce.
Lenny Bruce is a. I became a fan because of Harry Colombi, his interest in jazz, and he asked me to listen to him over at his house, and I got into him. And when I went to Hollywood to visit an agent out there, I had a day off, and I saw that he was playing in a theater in town, a movie theater, and not on screen, but live in this theater. And I went in to see him, and it wasn't the same as the records, because he was into that. First of all, there were about 200 people in a theater that sat about 2,500, and he asked us all to come down the front, and we all kind of filled in the first two rows, and he kept talking about his days in court, and it was a big deal that he spent most of the time talking about that, so it weren't too many laughs going on. So that was my experience with Lenny. I was seeing Lenny. Then I got to know his mother, and she was really nice. She was nice.
He was having a lot of legal problems towards the end, yeah?
Sure. The drugs and the life.
And the drugs, and yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched your clip on YouTube, on your YouTube channel, and there was a show on there that you did with Woody Allen and Liza Minnelli.
Oh, yeah.
What in the world was
very
that show?
Early.
I've never seen that
1967,
show.
1967, yeah.
67.
It's a look at 1967, I think it was called.
Okay.
Or 80, no, yeah, 67. And it was, and he took shots at movies that were very popular. One being, it wasn't. The first sketch we did, there was a rehearsal hall in Manhattan, and then we shot the show in Brooklyn. And the rehearsal hall, there was a scene where Liza Minnelli it comes out, and he plays the husband of Liza Minnelli. They're getting ready to go to a party, and she comes out in mini dresses, with just mini skirts, were just in vogue. And he comes out, and he says, when are you going to get dressed? She says, I am dressed. And he goes, oh, no, take that off, blah, blah, blah. A whole bunch of stuff goes back and forth between them. And then I'm going to arrive at their apartment early. My wife comes later, and I arrive early, and I see her and her long legs, and I go, whoa, I make a big fuss over her. And he comes along, and he calmly moves me out of the way and continues to talk to her about she's got to put something else on. And she can, you know, that argument goes on. So then at that show, whole different feeling with Woody. He's a different guy altogether. Instead of just moving me out of the way, he pushes me against this bookcase set, and things rattle in the bookcase, and as they start to recoil from that, he pushes me back into it, and then he goes about business with talking to Liza. And I thought, you know, as I'm waiting for my next line to come in, I'm thinking, what the hell is that all about? And well, maybe he thinks it's funnier, so I kind of dismissed it. Okay, so then we had this long thing about him as a babe, this one character as a child, and you can watch it. It's on the thing YouTube, and we get this through where he grows up. He's a little brat, and a little brat kid, and in business, and all this kind of stuff, which is fine. We never had any physical contact in that respect. So going to the last one was a takeoff on Bonnie and Clyde. Okay.
Yeah.
So I played the Jim Hackman, part where he plays his brother. He plays Clyde's brother, who is now Woody Allen. And Woody Allen, the brother, goes and hides up in the cabin, and my job was to bring some of the relatives up to visit him. Now, in rehearsal, I get out of the car, they jump out of the car, and they go up to the cabin, and he comes out, and I greet him, and we got pat each other on the shoulders and stuff like that, and blah, 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 blah. Fine. Now in the show with the audience, oh, it's a good, he's got this whole attitude, I come to go to pat him on the shoulders, and he belts me in the stomach, and then, one of those real, so I belted him back in the stomach, and as the scene fades, you see him falling to one knee. And I thought, okay. So that was that. And I never saw him or talked to him again.
I didn't even know he had a TV show. That's what was very surprising to me.
Well, it was a special.
It was a special.
Music hall.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, they had these specials. They had music sometimes. They had plays. They had the operas. They had different specials. Kraft Music Hall, yeah.
Let's see. Moving on to the 70s now.
Yeah.
Let's see. You had a syndicated half-hour musical variety series, and then you had your own show, the John Beiner Comedy Hour.
Yeah, Comedy Hour. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The other series was in '68. Called The Something Else Show, where it had so many wonderful people on there: Linda Ronstadt, and Taj Mahal, and Three Dog Night, and on and on and on and on and on. And we traveled to different places in the country. And to mostly try to find out where they lived when they grew up, and we'd have them there, and they'd do their thing. And it was quite a nice show, and there were six dancers that worked the show with me. I did a lot of dancing, and we did a lot of fun stuff. It was a terrific show, but nowadays it would cost $1 million to have it on with all the music that was in it.
A musical variety. So you basically showcased the top acts of the time?
Yes.
Okay.
That was it.
So... like Dick Cavett? I mean, was it like that sort of setup?
No. We traveled around. I did dance numbers with the girls, and I never sat at a desk or anything like that. I was in on it. I was singing and dancing doing sketches with the girls. And if we were in Chinatown, I was a Chinese guy and doing a, it was wonderful. And I wish everybody could see it now because it held up. I mean, it just is great.
Is it on anywhere? Is it on YouTube or...?
No, there are some people have copies of it that they post things every once in a while, but I don't know who's in charge of it anymore. It was the guy that held the cars, and he had sports, I don't know, I've lost his name in my head, but he had sports magazines, and he loved cars, old cars, and he was a hunter. You walk into his office, there was an 8-foot bear stuffed white just looking down at you. Amazing.
This was a network show, right? It was on what, NBC or CBS or
A&E, I believe.
Oh, A&E. Okay.
I believe that's what the thing was on A&E. Someplace in there. Syndicated perhaps, I don't know. But that was fun. It went on. We did 20 shows, and it was great. It was fun.
I wish there were more shows like that on. I mean, that would be my entertainment.
It really was a terrific show. I mean, I played Frisbee with Linda Ronstadt at the beach.
That's cool.
She sang her song. It was just amazing. It was just great. Absolutely.
Okay, well, we're still in the 70s, so I want to hit on one more in the 70s. Well, two more, actually. Tell us the Happy Days story.
Happy Days. I don't know what that story is. What do you mean?
Oh. Well, I'll read it to you. Maybe this was one of the ones that was wrong. It says, he was cast in Happy Days, Mork from Ork, but found the premise ridiculous.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, this is the one. I could have sued him over this. if I had a lawyer friend in the family. Here's the way this all went down. I was friends of a girl. I was dating a girl out there, and she was having Ron Howard and his wife. She had been on that show, and she was having Ron Howard and his wife over for dinner, and invited me to join. So I was there for dinner with them. We sat around. We had dinner. It's nice. And after dinner, coffee thing and all that kind of stuff. And Ron said, hey, John, they'd like to see you over to blah, blah, blah. You know, there's this character. And I said, what does he do? Does he do voices and sounds and little... Then he says, yeah. I said, well, I don't think so, you know. I wasn't into that. I did a lot of cartoon voices and all that kind of stuff. So I said, you know, I just didn't want to do it. I don't know what I was doing at the time as far as the business goes. I don't remember. Probably bouncing around the country doing nightclubs and this and that in Vegas and what have you. But I said, no, I don't think so. And that's as far as it went. I didn't turn anybody down. I didn't say I wouldn't do it. I didn't audition for it. It never went anywhere. I never heard about it. They find the other guy. And the guy that did it, I mean, he did a great job, and he pulled it off right. He was like a little crazy kind of thing. It was wonderful. It was right up his alley. It wasn't up my alley. So it all worked out great. I was happy I didn't do it. Now, when they come out with the movie about it, you know, the TV movie about it, they have me throwing the script down and saying, this is crap, and marching out of the place. You know, I never got near the place.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, Robin Williams.
Wikipedia.
Yeah, Robin Williams.
Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. He was a nice guy. I liked him.
Oh, did you meet him, yeah?
Yes. He complimented me. I did a show called Bizarre, and he complimented me on a few things that he had seen me do on the Bizarre show.
Was he as wacky as that off camera?
He was very, very quiet. He would quiet. Very to himself. I went to do a thing. Billy Crystal invited me to be on the dais of the opening of this thing, Mr. Saturday Night, years ago. and Robin was there, and he came over and complimented me on something he'd seen on my Bizarre show, the two faith healers that meet in the street. That was quite the show. David Thomas and I did these two faith healers that meet in the street, and they're going to, you know, help each other with their problems and their bodies and with this, blah, blah, blah. Then they become irritated with each other. Then they go the opposite way. Your arm is going to fall off. Anyway, it was hysterical. And he complimented me on that. It made him laugh. He loved it. And then he went and he sat in the corner. He sat in the corner of this huge room where people were, you know, backstage before they... huddled in this room before they went out to the dais, and it was quite the night. But he was like, you know, just he had his knees up to his chest in the corner, with his arms around his knees, you know how it is. And I thought, wow, you know,
he was really on or off, basically, yeah?
Yeah. If he wasn't on doing his thing and throwing around and jumping around, it was extremely quiet.
Let's see. Okay, one more in the 70s. I got to ask about the Carol Burnett show.
Yeah. A lovely, lovely woman.
Oh, yeah,
I love her.
It's
like, have you got a sister? Because it's just like having a sister. Carol Burnett is so comfortable to be around, and you know you can talk about anything with her, and she's pat you on the back, she'll slap you. You know, she's just a regular girl. She's just a wonderful person, And very, I mean, she'll laugh at you, and she has a wonderful, honest laugh, deep, deep and real, and it just, you just want to hear it, you know, so you go out of your way to make her laugh. And this is just rehearsal, and she's a wonderful person. I love her.
She's been one of my favorites. I wish they would put that show back on.
There's nothing she cannot do. Yeah. It went on for a while, you know, which was nice. You know, it really was an entertaining evening, you know, to tune her in. Well, I'd be honest with you. I mean, rest their souls. Harvey and Tim got to me after a while with his laughing at him and, you know, all the kind of stuff. I go, come on already, you know. I learned my lesson about messing with the script years ago. Gary Moore had a short-lived show, and I was on the show with a fellow named Jackie Vernon and Ron Carey and Lily Tomlin.
Oh, yeah.
And then a couple of other people. And one day we were doing a sketch about Halloween, and all week we'd rehearse around this big pot. We're supposed to be witches, and we're stirring the pot, the big large pot. And we have this thing that Jackie Vernon had to say. It was bubble, toil and trouble. I think I hit the daily double or something like that. In fact, that's exactly what he had to say. And Jackie Vernon, double, point and double. I think I hit the daily double. You know, he talked like that. So everything's fine until the day we're doing dress rehearsal. Everybody's in these long black wigs and these robes, you know, these monk-type robes. And we see Jackie Vernon in this robe, in this hair thing, the thing with this face and this voice, and we all start to laugh. And we're standing around this pot, and there's an audience, you know, a rehearsal audience. Everybody starts to laugh, and the audience starts to laugh, and everybody's laughing, and we're just laughing. They don't know why we're laughing, but they're laughing because all of us are laughing. So now, okay, the show is over, and a bunch of us go over to a little Chinese restaurant we used to like to eat at, you know, between shows, the day of shooting. And we're sitting in the Chinese restaurant, and boom, the doors fly open, and here come the writers. How you have no respect for what we did? And we just dropped our forks. We looked at them like, you know, okay, fine, just the way you want it. So here comes the show. We're standing around, and we're rubbing, and he's got the hair, and we're all thinking, oi. And he starts, daily, daily, totally in trouble. I think I hit the daily double. Nothing. Nothing from us. Nothing from the audience. And so I learned my lesson. Don't mess with their stuff. And that's what I did. I think I only used one ad-lib in the six or eight shows I did on the Carol Burnett show. And it was Vicki Lawrence and Carol are like statues that he had made this movable doll. I say it makes a movable doll who'll walk around and do things and talk and everything. And Vicki Lawrence is and Carol Burnett is the doll that I made, right? And the doll and Carol's doing her thing, and Vicki Lawrence, he said we're both the German professors, you know, that made these things. And he says to her, now you go and show them what you can do over there, Harvey says. And she goes, and she had this noise of the engine, a movie kind of thing, like, And I said, she sounds like the beginning of Bonanza. You know, like they used to have it. And it cracked up everybody. But the thing is, that's the only time I pulled it because it was in my throat. I had to say it.
That was the best Artie Johnson impression I've ever heard.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
It's funny, people would take me for him in airports and stuff. Aren't you Artie Johnson? I'd say, nope. It's funny how those things go. I was walking about 3 months after my old friend George Carlin passed away, rest his soul. I'm walking down the street with one of my daughters who lives there, and walking down the street, and the guy comes along with a little white dog, and he stops and he goes, aren't you George Carlin?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Not anymore. Anyway, those things happen, you know.
Did you do George Carlin? I mean, was that one of your...
No, absolutely not. No. Again, yeah, we both look like Irish Catholics, you know, and that kind of thing. Maybe we kind of looked alike.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would have mixed you two up.
No, but yeah. People do. Like, I don't look like Artie Johnson either.
No, but the voice was dead on. That was just spot on.
Yeah. Okay, what are we in now?
Let's see. We're just going through the end of the 70s. But I did want to ask you if you had worked ever with Jack Benny, because he was like my all-time favorite.
Jack Benny, you see, he came around to be a guest on that Gary Moore show, which I think only lasted like half a dozen shows. And I did speak with him. We sat together in the audience doing rehearsals and stuff. And he was a terrific guy, just a regular guy, you know, just a man who had this thing, you know. And I'd know, and it was just him, you know. He'd say, "Have you ever been in this?" "No, I haven't," you know. It was the whole thing. You know?
Wow. Yeah, that's great.
Sweet man.
But his timing was just unbelievable, and the way he could do nothing and with just that look to the ceiling, and he would bring the house down. Amazing.
Oh, yeah, and like on his television shows, you know, the Rochester would come and say, "I think I'll go around and get the car, boss." "Now cut that out." "Oh, that's right, we don't have the car."
We used to funny.
Listen to those things when I was a kid. My God.
What about Lucille Ball? Do you ever work with her?
Just once when I was on the Dinah Shore. I used to do the Dinah Shore show quite often in the afternoon show she had.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful show. Yeah. And she came on once with a bottle of champagne. She was celebrating something and I was sitting there with Dinah, and she came over and said, "Here, let a man open it." She handed it to me. Yeah, that's the only time I met her. And I met her husband in the same show, but not at the same time. You know, obviously.
Which husband? Desi or Gary?
Desi, yeah.
Desi, okay. Yeah. Let's see. The last thing I wanted to hit on, and then I think we're going to have to kind of wrap this up, is Johnny Carson. You were on that show a couple of times, yeah?
Several times, yes, in the 30s.
In the 30s.
I got different numbers from 30 to 37. I picked 37. Why not? And
tell us about Johnny.
Here's a guy who was a shy guy. He was like me. You know, we didn't bring up a comment. You know, we weren't. You know, I think shy guys just are bad at small talk. You know, Yuri is like my manager. We'd be flying to Europe or something like that to do a show, and he'd say to somebody across the aisle, "Hey, I like your shoes." He didn't give a damn about the shoes. He didn't like the shoes. He wanted to start a conversation. Well, I couldn't do that. You know, I couldn't say to somebody, "Hey, nice ring." You know, I'm not that kind of guy. So he'd come back in to get his hands made up, because sometimes they make up the face, they forget the hands up there in the room, you know, when they go up there to do the room. And if your face is all tan and you put your hand up, you say, "Where were your hands when you were outside?" You know. And anyway, he'd come in and he'd talk to me like Jessel, which was one of the things he liked to hear me talk like Jessel, George Jessel, an old guy that used to just talk like this, and they talk about the things, you know. He had this thing, and that's the way he talked to me. "So how you doing, John?" You know, that, and I'd answer him like Jessel, we'd have a few laughs. Then we'd go out and do the, you know, what I liked about doing his talk show is that he listened to you. He listened to you, and if he can, like a couple of times, like we happened not at the same time, but in the Navy we had both been on Guam for a while, you know. So we were talking about that during a commercial break, and we were talking about that, and he didn't go back to his notes, or he didn't come just talk about something about himself. He says, he come back from the dock, he said, "You're on." He goes, "Yeah, John and I were just talking about Guam." You know, he was just a conversationalist. He wasn't just like, and then I went to do the Letterman show, bless his heart, and in between, when they came to a commercial, the band was played so loud, I say, I leaned over to him and I said, is this in lieu of conversation? And he said, yes. So what can I tell you? That's why he was the best. Carson listened, and, you know, he was interested. He'd add his little something to it. You know, different story altogether. Now it seems they just want to get laughs themselves.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I really don't.
No.
I don't think it makes any difference. You know, if the show's going to be a good show, if the guest gets the laughs or the host gets, it doesn't matter. You know, it's people are going to remember.
Those were always the winners. Yeah. The Steve Allens, and as you say, the Jack Benny's, who weren't afraid to give somebody some time and have some laughs and help them out and all that kind of
thing. Yeah, I think my two favorites from those era were Dick Cavett and Johnny Carson. I think.
Yeah, now Dick Cavett. Dick Cavett is a more professional kind of guy. You know, he's very kind of stiff as opposed to Johnny Carson. You know, I mean, he's very, very precise in the voice and the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I liked doing Joe too. I really enjoyed him. I met one of my heroes in life, Louis Armstrong, doing that show.
Oh.
We were both on it at the time. Wow. What a thrill that was for me.
Well, John, we do have to wrap this, but. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, then. Hey, it's nice talking to you, Douglas.
A slow goodbye.
And listen, now we have the 80s and the 90s and the rest coming up the next year.
Well, you know what? Maybe you could come back and we'll do part two. And we'll do,
enough.
From the 80s up to now. Yeah?
We can talk about the millions of books I've sold.
Actually, I want to hit on your book for a second because it's a good plug. And 5 Minutes, Mr. Biner, A Lifetime of Laughter. When did the book come out?
It was supposed to be out June 1st because of the COVID-19. They pushed it to August 1st, and it came out the 1st of this month. Got some nice reviews. Got 5-star reviews so far.
Great. Did did the virus kind of screw up your book tour at all?
Well, the only thing the virus screwed up was when I did the the audio book. I had to go up to another town each time, and it's a small place, but they kind of made sure everything was cleaned down, and I had wore a mask, and I was able to get in this little booth, and the booth was cleaned. I sprayed it and all that kind of stuff, but I got a little concerned when it started getting a little heavier in this part of the world I'm in, and it all worked out. It's been more than 14 days, so
you're all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and great. You stay well, all right?
Oh, I will. I'll do my best. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing. This was a great treat for me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show.